most powerful forces of good ever assembled. These are the Super Friends.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Let's go, Bob.
Up, up, and away!
All right, boys and girls. If you're ready for the latest in comic book news and reviews, then welcome to the Geek Legacy Comic Corner podcast. If you're not, I gotta be honest, I really don't know why you're here. But stick around anyway and listen to the sweet, sweet tones of my voice. I'm your host, Jeff Muller, and as always, I'm joined by my arch nemesis, the Captain Cold to my Wally West, Geek Legacy's managing editor in charge of all things comics, Tyler Waterman.
Do I get a freeze gun? I really want a freeze gun now. I've always wanted a freeze gun.
I cannot give you one of those, no sir. All right. And I kind of feel like there should be some sort of applause there or something when I introduce you, like we should just have someone clapping in the background.
I agree. Yeah. I actually couldn't agree more.
All right, we'll get Justin and Dave to pony up for an applause section for us.
Thank you.
All right, so let's just get right into it. Is there so much to talk about this week as always? So what's going on in the news right now, Tyler? What you got for us?
Well, as always, what would be comic news without news of crossovers? More crossovers. All of the comics must cross over. The next big thing for Marvel is now out and about, even though we're just hitting the halfway point of Age of Ultron. It's called Infinity. It sounds awesome. Basically, we all knew there was going to be a thing that was designed to push Guardians of the Galaxy. We got to get that in the public face if we're going to do the movie, which is going to be great even with or without Dave Bautista. But this one is basically, there's a race that's coming. If you've been reading Avengers, you know about it. It's the race that they keep mentioning, the builders, the ones that basically are the oldest race in the Marvel U. They're on their way. They're destroying everything in their sight. On their way, they're going to rip through every single alien race you like in Marvel. If you've ever been a fan of anything from Kree to Skrulls to whatever, it's going to be in this. They're ripping their way through the galaxy. And then also on the other side, on the Earth side, here comes Thanos. And not only is it Thanos, but Thanos apparently has a crew of five dudes now. It's big. It's huge. It's got every Avenger. It has every new Avenger, Illuminati, whatever you want to call it. Guardians of the Galaxy. Scarlet Spider crosses over with it, like crazy books cross over into this. This is going to be the next big thing for them. So that sounds pretty cool. On the flip side, DC, not to be left behind, they're also doing their own. This is called Trinity War. Not as huge in scope. It crosses through the Justice League books. So Justice League, Justice League Dark, Justice League of America. And it's basically the three of them fighting. Apparently someone's going to die to set this off. They haven't said who. But it's always, isn't that always how it starts?
Oh, Jesus.
And apparently the ending isn't really going to be the ending. It's just the beginning of the next big thing, always, obviously. But that apparently, according to Geoff Johns, it's not going to end cleanly. Some crazy crap is going to happen or something along those lines. And
right.
All hell breaks loose after it. Moral of the story is there's cool big summer events. There you go. They're always there. You can't avoid it, and these are them this year. Trinity War, I'm kind of interested. Like, we'll see. But Infinity sounds cool. Anything that brings Marvel Cosmic, there's going to be a big focus on Black Bolt. Black Bolt's awesome. Like, I'm all for that. Dude, Black Bolt mumbles and the ground shakes. Like, that. He just has a cool, weird power. Really badass.
I can't stand the Inhumans. But so the one thing that I've heard about Infinity that's kind of bugging me, even though I'm not really down with the story of Age of Ultron, I like the way it's happening, kind of encapsulated, you know, self-contained, a couple little things that are kind of slipping out into the other books. But word on the street is Infinity is going to just be touching all sorts of books, and it's going to be the classic Marvel by 500 book crossover, which, man, even though the story does sound cool, and I'm kind of with you on that, just out of principle, despise those sorts of crossovers. I much prefer the way DC's doing it. Even though the quality of the DC stuff right now, I think, is less than Marvel, the way they're handling the crossovers to where they all seem to be self-contained in books that you probably already read or semi-invested in, you know.
Yeah, if you read Green Lantern, you read all the other Green Lantern books.
Right.
You don't. I hate Green Lantern Corps, but I love Hal. You know, it doesn't make sense.
Right. So I just wish... I wish more things were done in lines of the way they're going to do Trinity or the way they did Age of Ultron. I'm not looking forward to this return to the massive crossover event. I know you love them.
I
don't know.
It's the thing is, and you're right about this one. I mean, I had to look back through the article we put up about it, and some of the books that are crossing over with it. I mean, it's mostly tied in with Avengers and New Avengers. Like, that's going to be the bulk of it, other than obviously the six issues of the series itself. But Scarlet Spider, Thunderbolts, Wolverine and the X-Men, Captain Marvel.
Who the hell reads Scarlet Spider? That's a book?
Actually, Scarlet Spider is pretty good. Actually, the last couple issues bad. But before that, that was one of my not so great expectations. Actually, was a book that I thought this is gonna blow, and it was actually pretty good. But at the same time, it's an annoying thing to have to buy if you don't already read it. I don't want to have to buy an issue of Captain Marvel. That book is terrible. Like, I'm sorry, that book is nothing but blonde girl sass, and I'm sure that floats somebody's boat. But I don't want to spend $4 listening to it. So I don't know. It's just, I agree with you on this. I kind of agree with you.
What? Like, you agree with me?
I know it's hard to
shocking.
Believe.
Shocking! You're coming around to my way of thinking. I like this.
Well, here's the thing. I wouldn't mind buying a bajillion books, but here's the part that bothers me. If you want to make this all about Guardians and Avengers, you've got 15 Avengers books. Exactly. Cross it over into those. Right. Make me buy those. Make me actually shell money out for the ones that for everything with an A on it, not just the ones I pick and choose, even though I really like almost all of them.
Or be selective in the books you bring in. You know, like I really, while the story fell off with Rot World in DC, you know, a lot of people probably that were reading Animal Man probably weren't reading Swamp Thing. But bringing one book into the mix to try and slowly introduce audiences is more likely to get me to go, you know what? I will spend an extra $3 or $4 a month. That's realistic. To instead go, well, we're hitting 8 different books this month and they're all $3.99. That's a bit much to ask.
It is, especially when the books look like you put them on a dartboard and just threw darts. Yeah. And we're like, oh, Thunderbolts, sure, why not?
Right. It's an obvious, you know, hey, this book is flagging. We're going to make people buy it to bring the numbers up. It's cheap. It's a cheesy tactic.
It is, and it's transparent. And it's
very, very. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, before I let you go on about Infinity and your crush on Thanos, I want to hop right into showering some praise. And I want to do it on Indestructible Hulk number 6. Two words, Walt Simonson. Oh, while I really liked Lionel Yu's art, there's something about Walt Simonson's lines that just make me happy. They just bring me back to my teenage years of reading, you know, Marvel comics, and his art just, it's unique. It's a very, it just makes me happy to see it. I don't know. You know, I'll buy almost anything out there that he's laying pencils down on. I really will. And to seeing drawing that guest appearance of Thor in his classic old uniform. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. It was like, I just nerdgasmed. I was like, yes, yes. My youth. Here it is again. You know, that being said, I have some issues with the book. But the issues I have is with the series, not this issue. I thought the issue was on point. It was right in line with the story that they've been telling for the last 6 issues. I don't think that the change in art was shocking enough to make, you know, regular readers of the book go, oh, what's this? You know, it is a very different style, but I think it still fits the book in a way. The Hulk is very, you know, it's a larger than life, you know, character, you know, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And this type of art, I think, suits that character. So like I said, my issues are with the series. And I personally, you know, I can't stand how they're portraying Bruce Banner. He comes off just very unlikable to me. Just everything that was interesting about the duality of that character, the mild-mannered man and the beast, is gone. And now you kind of have this just cocky, dickish, you know, super scientist. It's like, you know, it's Tony Stark without the alcohol problem now, you know, and I don't know. And they need to rein in the super science. Like, it's getting out of control. I mean, between him, Reed Richards, Tony Stark, Hank Pym, and the Beast, there should be no problems left on the planet Earth. I mean, it should be like the Jetsons. You know, these fools are inventing crazy crap every single week, and yet there seems to be no trickle down to the common man, you know?
Yeah, like, everybody's still driving normal cars. Right. You know, like, yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't mind a bit of the fantastical. I mean, we're reading comics here, right? But, right. I mean, if the Marvel Universe is going to be semi-grounded in modern times, you have to dial it back a little. Yeah. With all the immense scientific breakthroughs that are happening in Iron Man, X-Men, the Avengers, and now this book, you got to wonder why stories like what's happening in Daredevil right now are even being written. Why is cancer still around? You know, these guys are they've solved every world problem in the span of 3 weeks, you know, because they can do these fantastical inventions, you know, every single week. You know, I think that was a line a couple issues ago. Bruce Banner was like, my goal is to solve a world problem every week. Well, there's only so many world problems.
Yeah.
Shit's going to get boring in about 2 months. You know,
yeah.
So, I mean, just in general, I think they're really overdoing that aspect. So while I like this book, it's definitely only a must read right now because of Walt Simonson. Then my decision to keep it on my pull list is really going to hinge on who the art team transitions to. The story and the writing, while they're decent, aren't enough to really keep me invested. I don't really care. You know, it's fun to watch Hulk smash, but you know, what? And the other thing is I want an explanation for the armor. Why the hell is Incredible Hulk wearing armor? Someone explain that to me, because no one has come up with any explanation whatsoever other than the three panels where he was underwater and it was to keep Bruce Banner alive.
Yeah.
You know, okay, I get that. But why? Someone please?
I hate it so much. When they first released that now teaser image, that was the first thing I said is, why is Hulk wearing armor?
Right.
He's all Hulk. You also have Red Hulk right next to
him, not wearing armor. Don't start me on Red Hulk. Don't. I swear to God. If there is one character that just needs to be obliterated from the face of comics, it is goddamn Red Hulk. What kind of creative laziness was that? I know. We're going to take the Hulk. But wait, we're going to put a twist on it. He's going to be red. Oh, you picked the other Christmas color. Gee, okay. That's completely different. Let's give him a whole new book of his own. A whole new story. Oh, sorry. We're talking about Indestructible Hulk. I don't want to get too far off topic.
I didn't realize that Red Hulk was... apparently you were touched by Red Hulk as a child. Listen,
Red Hulk and Red She-Hulk, because Jesus! Oh. The two characters that illustrate everything that is wrong in comics today, right there. Oh, son of a bitch. Anyway... So, do you read? Are you reading Hulk?
Yes. Oh, yeah, I read it. The Hulk Worthy panel was fantastic.
Yeah.
I love when anybody gets to hold Mjolnir. That one panel in Fear, at the end of Fear itself, where Cap holds it up, like, I was just like, yeah, that was my wallpaper for like 2 months. It's just, I love that. So, no, I'm in. I like the book. Again, I feel exactly the same way as you. I don't understand why they need the armor. I don't understand. A lot of the stuff is a little excessive. I actually really liked the Hulk series that it took over before it started really expanding. So I liked the Evil Crazy Banner. I thought that was at least interesting and different. But you're right about the current one. I'm cool with him realizing and getting a little bit of swag, realizing, wait a minute, I'm just as smart as these other guys. Like, I need to be taken seriously. I'm cool with that. But it didn't mean he had to become an asshole.
Right.
He could have still been mild-mannered Bruce Banner, but just a little bit more confident about what he could do. That would have been a lot more interesting than watching, like, Science Dick and the Green Guy. It's just an annoying show. I don't want to be a part of it.
Dude, that would have been the most awesome 80s buddy cop show. That would have been so
Science
good.
Science Dick and the Green Guy?
Oh, I'd have watched it. I don't know.
I'd have watched it.
All right. So what book do you want to talk about? What's on your list today?
Well, we'll stick with Marvel for now. I have a Marvel on the list. And it was, and I know a lot of people have been talking about it, but it's worth it. The Thanos Rising. Here's the thing about that book. I opened that book. I like Thanos a lot. I think he's a badass. And I opened that book and I started reading it. And right out of the gate, I hated it.
Really?
The art style, for whatever reason, when it started, I really didn't like it. I can tell you what threw me off right away. I hated the Thanos design. The weird, stupid, big spike things sticking off his back and shit. Like, I didn't like how it looked at first.
Huh.
And so I start reading it, and I start to hate it more. Because I realized right away what this is. This is going to be the story about how Thanos was born a good boy, but everybody was mean to him, and now he is bad. And so I was like, oh my god, you got to be kidding me. By the end of that comic, I loved it. There was something that he won me over the course of a book that there were things that annoyed me. I really wish, I hate, maybe it's just because I'm not a big Star Trek fan, but I hate when an alien race is, oh, they have this one wrinkle on their forehead. Other than that, they look exactly like humans. Oh, right. So they're totally aliens. I hate that. So I would have loved if everybody looked not like beautiful humans versus one ugly purple kid. But still, it was brutal. When he comes out of the cave and finds his friends being devoured, like everything, every shock page you knew was coming, but it just somehow, it wasn't over the top, like Avatar style super gore where you're just like, ew, who drew this? That's disgusting. But it was enough that you almost were like, wow, this is kind of bad for a Marvel comic. Like, it was good. By the end of the book, I was hooked. I mean, I was already in for this series to begin with, just because I want to be a part of it. I want to read it. I'm very interested in seeing this origin that we've never really gotten to see before. But I was really surprised with, it's very rare that I feel so strongly at the beginning of a book and feel completely different at the end of it. And I think it's worth mentioning that that's a book that if you go in expecting to like it, you're not going to be disappointed at the end of the day. And if you don't expect to like it, I think you will when you're done.
All right. I loved it from the get-go. Like, I didn't think I was going to enjoy it too much. But from panel one, I was in. I liked the art. I agree with you about the kind of Star Trek-y, oh, we'll put a wrinkle or a tattoo. Like, yeah. some weird geometrical shape on the face. Oh, alien now. Oh. I didn't see the shock panels coming. I was like, oh, snap. Oh, Jesus Christ. The thing that got me, and I don't know if it was intentional or not about the book, is that I was having a hard time following it in certain places. It felt disjointed. And then I started thinking about what the book was, and it's Thanos, or as I like to call him, Darkseid, remembering remembering his youth. And when you think back to things like that, like when you try and think back to stories from your childhood, they are disjointed, and they do hop around. And I was like, man, that was kind of a cool little touch. I kind of really dug that. And it wasn't what I expected. I wasn't expecting them to paint him in a meek light. Like, I expected him to just be evil from the get-go. Just looking for the 666 tattoo behind his ear because he's just a bad seed from the get-go. And while he was, and it was obvious he was a little off in the back of his head, I almost kind of felt like I understood his character a little bit. I was like, and it's hard for characters like that, those huge cosmic characters that are so much larger than life, your Galactuses or your Darkseids or your Thanos, they're just so unrelatable. It was kind of cool, I thought, that I was able to relate to the character a little bit, as twisted and messed up as he was. I'm in. Like, I really am looking forward to the rest of this series.
Me too. I know, I definitely am. Did you read the similar miniseries, the Red Skull miniseries that Marvel put out?
No, because the Red Skull irritates the crap out of me.
If you liked this, you should read that. A friend of mine reminded me the other day that this was very similar, and when he mentioned it, I couldn't believe I didn't think of it myself, but it does the same sort of thing where, I'm pretty sure it's also 5 issues. And it does the same sort of thing where you read it and you, by the end of it, you're like, did I almost feel bad for the Red fucking Skull? Like, you want to take a shower when it's over because you're like, oh, I'm so sorry. So I would recommend that with this as well. If you like that, and I would say the same thing to everyone who's listening. Like, if you like this, go read that. And I'll tweet I'll figure out exactly what it was called and tweet it out or what have you, because it's worth it. It's good enough that it should be read. If you can't like one without the other, if you like this book.
All right, I'll take that as a challenge. We'll see. Because as it's been, well established, I hate a lot of things.
You do hate a lot of things.
I do.
Especially Red Hulk.
It's the color red. I don't like the Red Skull either. I don't like the Red Hulk. I don't like Red She-Hulk.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Are you a fan of Red Tornado?
I am, actually. I am.
The one exception to the rule.
You got to have one.
Yeah, right?
All right. Jesus. All right, well, let's stick with Marvel.
Okay.
Do you read Hawkeye?
Oh, I love that.
All right. So Hawkeye number 9. I got to admit, I slept on this title. you know, I skipped out on it when it was released. I don't want to get into it with you right now, but Hawkeye as a superhero has always been a cheap imitation of Green Arrow. And I had zero interest in following a post-Avengers movie, Jeremy Renner-esque Hawkeye. Like, to me, in the movie, he just... While I got the role he played and I thought Renner did a good job, the character was not interesting to me at all as something I wanted to see solo. The just grim, brooding, quiet, you know, we've seen it a million times. I just really didn't want to spend money on it. But when Marvel decided to break Comixology, you know, a couple weeks ago, that was one of the number one books that they released for free during that bonanza. And I had seen good reviews of it, and I thought, well, what the hell? It's free. I'll read it. So I downloaded it, and I was immediately hooked. You know, this is nothing like what I thought it would be. I admit I was wrong on this book. I was really intrigued by the texture being given to Clint Barton. I still really don't care about Hawkeye the superhero. But I'll read Matt Fraction take on the man behind the quiver any day of the week. And it doesn't hurt that David Aja and Matt Hollingsworth have done what very few art teams have ever been able to do. They created a style that's 100% unique to this title. You can pull a panel out of this book that doesn't contain any of the characters. It could just be a car sitting on the street, and you will know immediately that it's from a Hawkeye book.
Absolutely.
That's rare. And it's really cool. Like, the color palette they use, the style, the minimalistic style, the art. I love it. I think it fits perfectly with a no-frills approach to the character that's being portrayed, too. You know, but specifically about this issue, you know. So I went back and I bought all the past issues. Like a crackhead, I was just like, buy. read them all, and I caught all up this week. So I read this issue, and it's nice that now we're really deep into the story. A lot of the little side plots that were all, you know, were established are all seeming to come together, and they're leading to something bigger, finally. One thing I was starting to notice with this book was, like, it was meandering a little, and I was like, they can only drag this, you know, down on his luck, beaten down superhero thing for so long. They kind of have to go somewhere with it, and I'm happy to see that it's moving forward and building to something. What it's building to, I don't know, but it's going somewhere.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spoil anything, but that ending, come on, man. Like, that's when I realized how brilliant this book is. Like, the last two pages of this issue, I got it, because I didn't even realize how invested I was in these minor side characters, you know. Somehow they took on a life and a personality of their own, off panel almost. Like, they're not on very, very often, but when they are, you feel like you understand them. They don't get a lot of screen time, and they shouldn't, but they all seem so real. So I'm going to continue to buy Hawkeye, you know, and no doubt, bro. You know, I'm in. I love it. I want to see where it's going. I don't know. What do you think? I mean,
I love it. I love that book. I love the way that guy writes that book is just as unique as the way the artists make the style. I feel like if I took just a handful of bubbles out of Hawkeye and just gave you a little bit of dialogue, it might not say Hawkeye, Clint, or anything in it, but I have a feeling you'd be able to pick it out too, you know, just like the art. No, that book is fantastic. When I do my weekly lists of what's coming out, obviously I use the info coming from Diamond. And you would be astounded to see this is in its, like, sixth or seventh reprint in some issues. I swear I've seen at least seven reprints of number one. I can't think of another book that gets reprinted as often as this. And that's including Image titles, so which seem to reprint every week. So it makes me happy not only that this book is successful and is so great, but that people are really buying it and getting it. It was number one really high on a bestsellers list, the first trade. People are actually buying this book, and that really, it gives me faith for comic fandom as a whole.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with the success of the movie.
Oh, of course.
But
at the same time, I feel like that would only account for the first issue.
Right.
No, I think I agree. The people who wanted Jeremy Renner would open it up, saw it, and thought, wait, this is what the hell is this? But everybody else was like, this is great.
And anyone who remembers Hawkeye as a character from the late 80s, early 90s, don't let that cloud your vision like I did. Because, you know, if you remember the 4-issue Hawkeye and Mockingbird miniseries from, like, 1989... This is not that Hawkeye. at all. Don't be an idiot like me and sleep on this book. Buy it.
Agreed.
All right, so what else are you reading?
All right, well, we'll move away from Marvel because we've been Marveling all over the place. We'll go a little bit indie. Well, I mean, as indie as Dark Horse is, but it's still very indie.
It's very indie.
Yeah, it is very indie. They brought back one of their classic characters this week, X, which normally things that just have X's in the titles aren't usually, that's usually a bad sign, but in this case it's not. X is very much one of those comics that is exactly what you want it to be, nothing more than that. If this is going to McDonald's and ordering a cheeseburger, you aren't expecting to get filet mignon, but you are expecting to get exactly what you get, and it's awesome. This book, it essentially is just your classic, is a city that's overrun with organized crime, and this guy is not taking it anymore, and he's killing them all, and it's just your classic brutal vigilante story. But for one, the X costume design is just great. It's just a really cool suit. Obviously that's a big part about superheroes. If you hate their costume, it's going to take a little bit for them to make their way into your heart. Mm. Here's looking at you, Sunfire.
I will fight you, sir.
Dude, those face flaps are ridiculous.
I love it.
Also, his costume is red.
Son of a bitch.
But it was just the whole gist of the first issue is him taking out three mob bosses. And what's cool about this guy is it's, from all intents and purposes, just a dude, and he gets acid poured on him. He takes these razor blades to the face. He's trying to break into this guy's panic room, and he just keeps getting worse and worse traps, and he just keeps coming. It's pretty bad. Pretty much the first thing you see him happening to him is a sniper's bullet going through his arm, but killing the dude that was supposed to be the decoy. It's brutal. But again, it's not over the top. It's just
only acid to the face.
No, it wasn't to his face. It was like on the chest and arm.
Oh, well, that's okay then.
it only eats through his suit, pretty much. But it's still, it's just your classic pulp title. It's a really great pulp title. And it's nice. I mean, Dynamite has a lock on that right now. Green Hornet is falling away from that. But other than that, the other issues are really still really good. It made me want more. And then, poof, Dark Horse was there to bring us a little bit more. And if you like that kind of stuff, if you want more pulp comics in your life, this is a good spot to look for it.
Is it a full-on book or a miniseries?
I'm pretty sure it's a monthly. I don't recall seeing it being listed as, you know, one of blank. I'm pretty sure this is here to stay.
Well, I mean, you didn't sell it to me. I'm not going to rush out and buy it.
It's not your kind of book. I can definitely tell you that. But for people who like good comics, he is pretty good.
I'm pretty sure I might just cut off your feed right now, and I'll just talk the rest of the
alone. Yeah, son of a... Does that periodically enter? I agree with you. Everything you say is right.
Yes. I'm gonna isolate that and just and play that soundbite from now on.
I'm gonna do the same thing for about 5 minutes ago when you said you were an idiot.
Fair enough, sir. Fair enough.
Yep.
All right.
All right, what else you got?
Well, let's stick with indie stuff.
Okay, cool.
So Boom Studios put out a new title, miniseries, called Polarity. So Polarity number one came out. I kept hearing all this chatter on Twitter about it because I guess the writer of this book is famous, and because I'm so out of touch with the modern world and pop culture. I have no idea who he is, but evidently big deal in the, indie music scene. Max Bemis, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. So he's a singer lyricist who wrote this book. And I want to preface up front, I liked the book because some of the stuff I'm going to say might sound like I wasn't a fan. I'm going to buy the rest of this series. Okay. It's just that the subject matter was so serious. And you have to take it so seriously. This isn't a feel-good comic by any stretch of the imagination. This is a very cerebral book, and I'm into that, but I just don't know how to explain it. I don't know how to adequately describe what the hell was going on in this book. So essentially, did you read it?
No, okay. This is one that did not.
All right. So it's a book about an artist, and he's got bipolar bipolar disorder.
Okay.
And he believes he's a superhero. And this is in the first page or two of the book. This is all he gets set up. Then he gets hit by a car and wakes up in the hospital and realizes, oh, I'm not a superhero.
That'll do that, yeah.
Yeah, gets put on meds and, you know, all is good in the world. And about half the book is devoted to his inner monologue and how he's dealing with being medicated in or out and around in the world. It feels very clinical in a sense, but also very real, which probably makes sense due to the fact I found out that Bemis himself suffers from bipolar disorder. So you can kind of almost get the sense of it's a little bit of a self-therapy, so, you know, like autobiographical in some sense. And it feels real. This isn't someone writing about something thinking, no, I think it might be like this. This is someone who knows what it feels like writing about it.
Right.
Really kind of cool. So about halfway through the book, you know, it deals with him being an artist, you know, how, you know, his girlfriend's telling me his art is suffering because, you know, it seems kind of dead now that he's on his meds. And he starts questioning himself, maybe I should go off my meds, which I'm sure is something that is a thought process that people in that situation probably go through all the time, whether they think they're a superhero or not.
Right.
So halfway through the book, he goes off his meds, and that's where the story really kind of takes off. And, you know, and you track his quick descent into the highs, lows, and paranoia of his condition. Final page, you know, I'm not going to ruin it for anyone, but the final page reveals that he might actually have superpowers on top of that his meds have been suppressing. So it's kind of an interesting setup, and it's going to be wrapped up in four issues. I don't think that I would be on board with this book if it was a full-on monthly.
Right.
I think it would get kind of old and a little heavy. And, you know, while some people might like that, I like my books generally to be a little more fun.
Yeah.
But for a four-issue stint where the story seems like it's going to be encapsulated, there's a definitive end to it, I'm really kind of interested in where this is going. Because ultimately, you know, either he has superpowers or his hallucinations have become so ridiculously vivid that, and you don't know. You
right.
don't know as the reader. And the character himself has that realization to himself where he goes, man, I'm either actually a superhero or my hallucinations have gotten to the point where I am batshit insane, and he doesn't know. So I'm really interested in seeing where this goes, and I kind of get why the praise was there. The art is decent. Story is very good. You know, for his first comic book, I was very impressed with the writing. I recommend, you know, I'm putting it out there. I recommend people pick it up. It is not your typical, you know, spandex and cape sort of a book.
No, but it sounds like a pretty cool book. You're right. It sounds like a kind of thing that even if it was a 10-part, I think I'd be like, I'm good. But 4-part, it's not hard to be committed to a 4-part series. Yeah, it's really not.
All right. So that's my pitch on Polarity. What else you got?
Well, I would be remiss if I did not discuss some sort of Batman-related comic. I mean, who would I be if I did not bring in a Bat title this week? Everybody was talking. Everybody was all. I mean, we've got this DC's WTF certified month.
Yeah,
which
whatever that is.
This is really lame, and I really like gimmicks and I like things, but this is lame.
Yeah, this is bad.
This whole week has been, or this whole month seems to be, hey, we're going to put this thing on the cover, and when we're done, it's not going to be that. And it's just like, okay, cool. I can see that if we pulled it on one or two books, but if you pull it on every book, we're not going to fall right. for it 30 times, or
right.
excuse me, 52 times. So, with that being said, everybody was talking about it because they tease, oh, it's going to be Carrie Kelly, the Dark Knight Robin, the girl Robin who mm-hmm. proved that sunglasses can be a mask. sunglasses that are clear could be a mask. Oh my God, she's going to be the new Robin. Every Bat comic right now is about who's going to be the new Robin, when it's very clear that no one's going to be the new Robin. So that part is the tease on the Gatefold cover. It is maybe 8% of the comic, and it's
right.
really very throwaway. I'm not going to say I hated it, but I can't say that I really enjoyed it. Right now I really like the things that show how Bruce is dealing with the loss of his son. I did not feel like this advanced it in any way. I mean, it was cool, but I don't know. I just feel like we're running out of ideas to show how upset Bruce is. And having her appear in a Robin costume at a Halloween party, I guess that's what it's supposed to be, or a costume party of some sort, whatever.
Right.
Oh, I don't know. It was just kind of lame. That being said, the meat and bones of the story that has to do with him essentially kind of losing it and kidnapping Frankenstein and demanding he teach him how to resurrect his son. This is how I feel about that. This was right story, wrong guy. This story would have been epic if it was Raish or Raz or whatever, however we want, whatever, however we're pronouncing it this week.
Right.
If it was Al Ghul himself, if he managed, because he's alive again, he's back, he's alive again, right. He's Alia's captive, which would almost make this make sense more. If that same story had been, hey, had broken in, swooped in, grabbed Al Ghul, yanked him out the window, and made him tell him, I want you to teach me how to make a ladder. Well, I mean, he knows how to make one, but help me find one. I know you've got an extra one stashed, whatever. If it was that story, this would have been must-read book. That it was Frankenstein really hurt it. It very much, I feel like somebody walked into the pitch room and was like, hey, we're going to do this story with Al Ghul. And they were like, yeah, Frankenstein, we want to make him big because he's going to be a part of Trinity War. So we're going to make it Frankenstein. And he was like, can it not be Frankenstein? And they were like, it's going to be Frankenstein. Like, it just seems really lame. But it was really cool. I don't understand why we started the new title with this when Red Robin was in this book for, I think, three panels, maybe? Maybe four panels, I think.
Three panels too many, but yes.
Somehow. Well, why? Let me guess. Because he's red?
Yeah.
The trend continues.
Duh.
So there was that. But I did think it was a really cool story. I just really wish it was somebody more interesting than Frankenstein. Like, I don't know. I'm really conflicted on this book. And not in a bad way, but it just, following up, that issue being the follow-up to 18, just being one of the most beautiful comics I've read in a long time,
right,
to this sort of way over the top story with this extra shock thrown in. I don't know. It just, I don't know. It didn't sit right with me.
No, I get you. I mean, and because, you know, unlike you, you know, I only read a couple of bad titles. So I haven't seen all the different ways that they're portraying Bruce dealing with, you know, Damian's death. I kind of liked this, the beginning, the first half of this comic I liked. I didn't mind the Carrie Kelly thing. I do kind of hate the fact that now they've completely torpedoed Dark Knight out of any chance of being in the continuity.
Yeah.
That angers me a little bit. But I was like, oh, that's cool. Okay, whatever. I liked the scenes of him going through the heads up footage of his son and things like that. I was like, you know, that makes sense to me. That's what a grieving father would do. I get it. The Frankenstein stuff went so far off the rails. I didn't know what to do with it. And I hate it. Went, there it is again. I hate
everything.
Period. I hate, period. That's it. You know. I hate the fact that Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, is a part of the DC universe. It is the dumbest thing. You know, I tweeted about this the other day, actually, you know, reminiscing about, you know, I wonder what happened. Who was in the pitch room when Marvel and DC, Marvel said, I'm taking Dracula, you can have Frankenstein. Because I remember back in the late 70s, you know, there was a Dracula comic for Marvel, which was just as ridiculously stupid as Frankenstein. Really? Like, why is that? Who buys that book?
Who buys that book?
Someone buys it. I don't know.
People are buying that. Other books have been, Blue Beetle have been canceled. But like, these are like main guys in the DCU. Yeah. But Frankenstein's still going.
Yeah, I got angry when he showed up in Rotworld. I got angry this time when he showed up. What I did like, though, and I will say this, I did like the fact that Frankenstein beat the crap out of Batman easily, because sometimes you forget Batman has no superpowers, you know. And it was nice when Batman was like, "Oh, I'm going to show you," and got bitch slapped down a little bit, you know. That was kind of cool, and I went, "Okay," you know. And Frankenstein even said later, "I'm letting you do this so you can see your mistake." I was like, all right, you know. Now, I am grasping for positive things to say about the second half of this book, because, like you, I didn't get the whole Red Robin thing. I didn't understand it. I don't know why this felt like two separate comic books pushed together. Mm-hmm. Like there was one story up front and it was, you know, the Carrie Kelly stuff. And then there was very obviously a different story that felt like it could have been written by a different person. Like, I didn't go back and check. Was this actually written by two different people?
No, I really feel like this was supposed to be a more fleshed out Frankenstein story. And I feel like they were told they have to add something shocking to it for the WTF thing.
Well, the shocking thing is Frankenstein's in a goddamn Batman book. That should be shocking
enough. That's what I'm
enough.
Thinking. The gatefold cover could have been Batman looks for help from ... folded over Frankenstein. And that would have been just as ridiculous as Carrie Kelly. I would have been just as, what? It just seemed so not needed that it just bothered.
Well, I got to say that I'm happy that I see you growing as a person and actually acknowledging the flaws in a bat title. Bravo, sir.
Hey, I'm right there to remind everyone that they shouldn't spend money on Batwing.
That's good. That's good. Or Red Robin or Red Hood and the Outlaws or any of the other 1,500 titles that don't need to be there.
Actually, Red Hood's pretty good.
Oh, shut up. Christ. All right, so I'm done talking about Frankenstein. I'm done being actually I'm not
Who is it?
I'm not done being angry because now I got to do the listener request of the week. Oh, son of a bitch! All right, so this week, Starbuck on Twitter asked us to review the Game of Thrones comic adaptation of George R.R. Martin's A Song of Fire and Ice series for, and I quote, the lulz. So because we aim to please, I've done just that. God help me. First and foremost, I want to say that before I agreed to cover this one book, I didn't know this was a Dynamite Entertainment title. I'm pretty sure I just spent half the last podcast decrying anything that comes out of that godforsaken company and proclaiming how I'd never give them another dime. So of course, what happens this week? I give them $4. Oh, son of a bitch. So I go to Comixology to download the book, the latest issue, and I realize they don't digitally sell it. Great. So this afternoon, I drive to my local comic book shop, Beyond Comics in Frederick, shout out, and picked up the latest issue that they had, which happened to be 13. I believe 18 is actually the most recent, but I really don't think it matters, to be honest with you.
No, probably not.
So anyway, I take the book up to the counter, and the story of me buying the book to me is more interesting than the book itself. This should tell you something immediately. I take the book up to the counter, and the guy behind the counter looks at the book, then up at me, with what I can only imagine is like the same look that an airport newsstand clerk gives people who buy porn before they get on a plane. Like, it was just this look of sheer disdain and judging. Like, he was just judging me. And I felt horrible. Like, this is a first for me. Like, I have never felt embarrassed to buy a comic book before. Jesus. Anyway, the things we do for our listeners.
Right.
All right. The book itself isn't necessarily bad. I was expecting it to be horrible, and to be honest with you, it wasn't. It was amazingly average. It's a glossy book, passable art. The adaptation of the story was decent. The focus of this particular issue, for those familiar with the book or the TV show, was the aftermath of Ned Stark's altercation with Jaime Lannister and the trial by combat of Tyrion in the Vale. Two pretty pivotal scenes,
yeah,
you know,
pretty good parts.
Yeah, in the book, you know, they establish just, you know, how crafty Tyrion is and how he's able to get out of trouble and kind of lays the groundwork for the eventual downfall of Ned Stark. What struck me the most was how no one was ugly. Like, Starbuck asked us, he said he was in, he or she, I don't know, I believe it's a she actually, said, you know, she was interested in our opinion of the graphical representation of the characters. So that's what I want to focus on here. So no one was ugly. The women were all beautiful and shapely. And even Tyrion, who in the books is described rather frightfully and is much uglier than Peter Dinklage is portrayed in the HBO series, has an almost handsome face to him. I just didn't get it. You know, the major characters, seemed to be at least be reimagined by the artist, which was good. They didn't look like the characters from the TV show for the most part, which, okay, good on them. So, you know, they're not simply trying to draw the likenesses of HBO.
Which is what killed the Game of Thrones video game.
Which is what I would have expected from Dynamite, be honest with you. But the whole affair just seemed like a hollow shell. You know, I guess my problem with books like these isn't so much the how, but the why. Why would someone buy this? You know, I remember back in the early 80s, there was a steady stream of comic book classics. So these classic books that they had turned into comic books. You know, things like Robinson Crusoe, Treasure Island, Moby Dick, Last of the Mohicans, those sorts of things. But I'm pretty sure the entire basis of that audience was kids who would buy them like Cliff Notes so they could write the book reports. I don't think anyone was actually buying those like, oh, you know what? I want to read Robinson Crusoe, so I'm going to get the comic book version. I really don't think that happened very much.
No.
So, no one's requiring people to read A Song of Fire and Ice in school. It's not, there's no market there for it. You know, if you've read the books, you aren't going to be reading the comic. If you're watching the TV show, you're not going to be reading the comic. Who's actually buying this? Like, who is the audience that they're targeting? I just don't get it. You know, if it brought something new or interesting to the table, I might recommend people partake in this. You know, but it just offers nothing new. And it's things that you can consume in two better, you know, far better formats elsewhere. You know, watch the TV show or read the regular books. Yeah. I don't know why you would spend $4 an issue to get, you know, a minuscule amount of these massive stories.
Yeah, it's... doesn't why does this exist is all I can think whenever I see a book like that. Just why?
Yeah,
right. Who's the audience?
Right. Ooh, who wants this? I couldn't get good even if it had good art. I couldn't in good conscience recommend it because man, you're going to spend a fortune getting the story in comic book form. I mean, just go buy the book on tape or buy the book or watch the show or any of the other, you know, million ways you can consume this really cool story.
Yeah.
So even if this turns into the segment where you merciless bastards out there make Tyler and I read the worst of the worst, we'll do it for you. Because, let's be honest, it's quickly become clear we're really just dancing monkeys here for your sick and twisted amusement. So make sure you tweet us with your listener request. Tyler and I will read whatever you want, and we will give you our honest opinion. And, you know, we might be wrong. Chances are probably not, because I know I'm not wrong, ever.
Yeah,
Tyler's wrong. Most of the time, never. But sometimes he gets it right.
Pretty much never.
So we're in. Just tweet us your questions. You can always reach us, and we'll get back to you and try and fit it into the show. That being said, don't bother wasting your money on Game of Thrones comic, and screw you, Dynamite Entertainment.
It'd be a shame if you didn't get that in.
And since I committed to this bit last issue, I'm going to ride this horse until it's dead in a bleeding pile of fail. I don't care. That's right, folks. It's time for the haiku review. All right, this week I gave Godzilla the 50-Year War a shot, and here are my thoughts. Giant beasts attack, humans scatter like roaches, go, go, Godzilla. I mean, what else can you really say? I mean, it's Godzilla. He's big, he's angry, he breathes atomic fiery breath, and people can't do shit. You know, so I picked up issue 5 and realized, you know, hey, this is a 5-issue miniseries. So I just went and bought them all and read them from the start. You know, 5-issue miniseries, it follows the life of a Japanese soldier who's been tracking Godzilla and all the other assorted monsters for 50 years. Kind of a cool concept. It really just encapsulates the craziness of the Godzilla movie franchise into a neat little timeline and gives it some form of context. Nothing too deep, but you know, it kind of gives you a human point of view of someone looking outside at Godzilla rampaging around Southeast Asia for 50 years. If you're not into giant lizards raining atomic destruction down on helpless cities and fighting other giant ridiculous monsters, you're probably not going to get much out of this. The art's good, but not so good you would pick it up just for that. The story's kind of minimalistic, much like the movies were. But I give it a solid thumbs up for fans of the genre. You know, everyone else can probably save their money. But if you like Godzilla, it was actually kind of cool. Did you read any of these? Are you a Godzilla fan?
I mean, I do love Godzilla movies.
Wait, you said no, like, oh dear God, no. That's like the Game of Thrones comic. I wouldn't be seen dead with that.
But to be, I mean, it's just, the idea of reading Godzilla just seems so redundant. Like, it's an oxymoron to me. I don't understand, like... then Godzilla breathed his fire. Like, it just makes no sense. I get it's a comic, but still, even with that, like, it's a movie. It's meant to be a movie.
It is. But what it does, and what it was kind of cool, was there's never any explanation in any of the 500 movies in that catalog of why Godzilla, Mothra, Rodan, you know, Mechagodzilla, any of these, you know, things are rampaging. Like, why are they so angry? Why? Why are you so angry? This book, you know, because it's told from the point of view of humans, the minimalistic story is about what is causing this rampage of monsters through Southeast Asia, which was kind of cool. It's kind of like someone said, you know what? Those movies make no goddamn sense. Let me write a little story around that to bring it all together. No, I don't know why now, so many years after the fact, that was an important story to tell. But if you're a Godzilla fan, it's worth 5 issues. Go buy it. You'll read it once. You'll smile. You'll remember, like, oh, I remember that monster there, because they pull some pretty obscure ones out.
Right.
Kind of cool. But again, if you're not a big Godzilla fan, don't bother.
That's what I would have expected, pretty much.
All right. So since you didn't read it and we can't really discuss it, you know, lazy bastard. let's get into our favorite part of the show here, where we rant. Just get out our nerd rage over all the things that are pissing us off in the world of comics right now. Since I've been talking for like what feels like the last half an hour, I'm going to take a breath and let you go first.
It feels like a 50-year war.
You're fired. I'm done with you. I'm done with you. I'm replacing you with a 13-year-old fanboy.
All right, let's see. Are we starting positive or negative?
Oh, negative as always.
Oh, of course.
Always negative.
Oh, good. All right, well, here's the thing. I'm never as negative as you. My rant is almost a rave.
Again?
It's a thing I feel so strongly
stop
about.
Stop breaking my format.
Here's my rant. My rant has to do with All New X-Men number 10, which, okay, of course, immediately everybody's going to say, what? But this is one of the best books in the world. And they're right, because it is one of the best books in the world. Where my rage comes from is that since AVX has ended, there has been a movement known as Cyclops Was Right. And here's the thing about Cyclops Was Right. They're right. Cyclops Was Right. And this book really encapsulated, it was the first time, we've had a couple moments where Scott was able to take some time and really explain his position. Kind of, AVX Consequences is a great spot when he had that meeting in his cell with Wolverine.
Right.
Where he got a chance to say it. But this was the time that, I'm starting to get mad that no one is listening. It's starting to upset me that he can come out here, he can walk right into, and frankly, I think one of the best comic events, even though it's so small on the scale of 2013, will be the Uncanny X-Men roll up on the Jean Grey School. This was one of the coolest things. Like, you know what, the Avengers are going to be frozen in time for an hour, let's go do this. And it was awesome. Every part of this whole little crossover was awesome. And so I loved it. But here's the thing, and it made me think back to this. It actually made me even go back and reread this. Have you ever read the Avengers Children of Crusade miniseries?
No.
Okay, you need to read that. I will give you the money to buy it. It is the most important Marvel comic that no one ever read. If I could tell you that you can go read a 9-issue miniseries.
Tell me this all the time, though. You're like, this is the most important book ever written.
This single-handedly proves that basically everything that's happened from through the entire House of M. I'll just sum it up in one fell swoop. What if I could tell you, I can prove to you that House of M was Dr. Doom? Dr. Doom did that.
You know what?
I can prove to you that No More Mutants was a Doom plan.
You know what I would tell you? That I don't care, because House of M was freaking retarded.
But No More Mutants is too important to ignore. Ugh. It's one of the most, it's one of the biggest things that ever happened in the Marvel Universe. You can't kill all the mutants and not say that, whether you liked it or you didn't. If I killed all the superhumans, that would be a thing. If I killed every Avenger, that would be a thing. Whether you liked it or not, it'd be a thing. This is a thing. So, Children's Crusade, the reason I bring this up is because at the end of it, the Avengers and the X-Men are there, and now Scarlet's back. It's one of the things that happens is it's the return of Wanda, the Scarlet Witch.
All right.
And when they're all there and the Avengers are pretty much ready to take her down, and the X-Men want to kill her, and so on and so forth, Wiccan steps up and says, you know what? Actually, it could have been Billy. It's one of the two. Steps up and says, you know what? How many of you have been possessed, have been brainwashed by Hydra, have been sent back in time, have been possessed by Dormammu, have been taken their soul from Mephisto, have been possessed by Doc Ock, have been whatever. Every single one of every Avenger, half the Avengers were started off as supervillains. All of these people have all these horrible records. Somehow that's fine. Scott Summers gets possessed by the Phoenix Force, and that's it. And everyone's mad at him. Somehow it's not okay that Scott gets to say this. Scott has to be responsible for it. And this was, I think, the best issue yet where he was able to prove his point. And it just frustrates me to no end that no Marvel hero will actually listen to
it. You're right. You're right. And that's because Scott Summers is a giant douche. I mean...
Thank you.
I'm sorry. He's one of the most unlikable characters in the Marvel universe. Always has been. He's always been dickish. Always been standoffish. The problem with Scott Summers is he has always been holier than thou. And now, when other people are turning it around on him, he doesn't like it. He's like, oh, don't be mad at me. It wasn't my fault. I was possessed by the Phoenix Force. Tony Stark did this to me. Yes, you're right. In a way, he's right. But I'm kind of enjoying people being like, shut the hell up, Scott.
Scott Summers is the single most tragic hero in comics.
Okay, listen. You have got to eliminate single most from your vocabulary.
No.
Because everything is the single most important storyline, the single most important character, the single most important moment.
Listen, it's true. No one has had more bad things happen to him than Scott Summers.
No, God.
No one. He's had to bury his wife, what, three times? the force that killed his wife possessed him and made him kill his own, essentially his father. His life starts by essentially being pushed out of a plane by his dying parents.
All right, stop.
He spent his whole life having giant robots sent after him to kill him by his own government. The guy's never caught a break. There's no reason for Scott Summers to not be a douche. All right, he has every justification to be a douche. But this is a time where Scott Summers wasn't a douche. He was trying to do what he
thought. I agree with you. I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with the what. I will disagree with the how a little bit. I think he's just coming off as a whiny.
I think it's more of
a
who.
He's just being a whiny little bitch about it. You can't immediately expect forgiveness. You know?
No.
Some time heals all wounds, right? And in the comic universe, it's more true than anything else. That's yes, true. Why every hero has been possessed, you know, or started off as a supervillain. It takes time. I mean, no one still trusts Wanda.
No.
You know, I mean, it takes time, but eventually they will. And eventually they're going to heal the wounds with Scott Summers, because if they don't, then there'll be a disjointed X-Men, and eventually they got to bring it all back together again so the next big event can fracture them one more time. You know, because it's just the cyclical way that comic books go.
Especially X-Men teams.
But why is that a rant about all new X-Men number 10? Why?
I just
wanted to rant about Cyclops' rant. Son of a bitch. Oh.
Hey, it was a rant. It was definitely a rant.
Your rants are not supposed to get me worked up, and now I'm even more angry.
See? It's super effective.
Stupid Cyclops. And somewhere, Justin from Geek Legacy is having an aneurysm right now.
It's true. If he won't post this, we'll know why.
All right. Well, I have a rant as well, and I'm not going to make up a reason to talk about it. You know, I'm just going to put it out there. The saga bullshit from today, or yesterday, rather.
I guess both, really.
Yeah, a little bit yesterday, a little bit today. And, you know, if anyone out there is reading Saga, you know what happened. If anyone out there is following all the comic sites on the internet, you know what happened. If anyone is following anyone comic-related on Twitter, you know what happened. But for the three of you that don't follow any of those sites, but yet magically listen to this podcast, let me lay out what happened to you. So it came out that Saga number 12, which came out yesterday, was not going to be published on any Apple apps, you know, iOS apps, you know, be it Comixology or, you know, I'm sure there's a couple other, you know, like e-reader apps where you can download the CBRs and read it. It came out that it just wasn't going to be published due to depictions of homosexual activity. So immediately everyone jumps on the bandwagon, you know, like, oh, Apple's evil, Apple hates gays, you know, whatever else. Then yesterday, about halfway through the morning, Comixology releases a statement. And I'm going to read you a portion of this statement because my rant is not against, you know, Apple. I don't believe that Apple told Comixology, don't publish this. My rant's actually against Comixology and the cover-up afterwards and the dodging of the actual issue. So I'll read you an excerpt of their press release yesterday where they decided they were going to push Saga 12 about midway through the day. They published it on the app. You know, as a partner of Apple, we have an obligation to respect its policies for apps and the books offered in apps. Based on our understanding of those policies, we believe that Saga number 12 could not be made available in our app, so we did not release it today. We did not interpret the content in question as involving any particular sexual orientation, and frankly, that would have been a completely irrelevant consideration under any circumstance. Given this, it should be clear that Apple did not reject Saga number 12. After hearing from Apple this morning, we can say that our interpretation of its policies was mistaken. You'll be glad to know that Saga number 12 will be available, blah, 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 blah. We're sorry, blah, 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 blah. Here is my problem. If anyone read Saga number 11, you would realize what an utter pile of goddamn bullshit this is. Because Saga number 11 had some of the most graphic sex I have seen in a comic in forever. Not just the visual depiction of it, but the verbal depiction of it. The things that were being said were porn worthy for about, you know, a page and a half of that book. So if you can push that, and you have no problem whatsoever with that, the two tiny little frames where there's a small aspect of a picture of a dude blowing another dude, that sets off the bells. Oh, we might be violating Apple. Bullshit. It was 100% about the fact it was gay sex rather than heterosex. You can't spin it any other way. And I don't know if it was all Comixology, if it was partially Apple, partly Comixology, but the excuse they came up with was bullshit. It's pandering. I don't buy it for one second. And I honestly think that Comixology must think I'm an idiot or have short-term memory loss, because a month ago I was staring shocked at the first page of Saga 11. And oh, by the way, what was it, three issues ago, there was a 40-foot giant penis walking around on a planet, you know, as well. Come on, really? I'm not buying it one second. I'm pissed about the whole thing. I'm enraged. The vein is going in my forehead right now, and Tyler is looking at me through the camera like I'm an angry child that needs to take a timeout. So what? What?
Well, here's the thing about all that, and this one in particular was following really closely. And I mean, I read I think the first five issues of Saga. It's good. It's just not a thing. I have to save money for all these bat titles, so I read it. It's a thing that someday when Saga is over, they'll make a complete edition and I'll pick it up. But here's the thing that when I saw this break and I saw everybody start to flip out about it, as my part of what I do for Geek Legacy is report comic news. So I'm sitting here and I'm trying to decide, and Geek Legacy is just a project of our hearts. So I have to do real work too. So I have a limited amount of time here to decide if I want to do this, and I decided not to. And I'll tell you why. I'm watching all the stories go up, and all I could think the entire time was, 24 hours from now, this story is going to end up being something completely different, and everybody who's fallen all over themselves to report this as what they think this is right now are going to look like assholes. And sure enough, 24 hours later, we were looking at a lot of assholes. No Saga porn jokes intended. The thing about this whole story is everyone was so excited for controversy that what they didn't recognize here is that I don't think this was really a big issue. I think you're right. I do think that the response that came out from Comixology, whether who knows whose fault it really was, but the response was definitely Apple and Comixology got together and said, yep, okay, how are we going to make this go away? You know, it wasn't like, oh, guys, oh, you misunderstood. We bring that crazy gay comic in here right now.
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely, we need to make this go away. What I like is that the way they made it go away was offer the book. I think that was really good. I do think that that was better than being like, there's nothing we can do about it. I like that they said, oh, no, no, here it is. We apologize. That's fine. What I don't like about it is it's reflective of what's annoying, honestly, about this internet media, is that because everything is so fast and because everything breaks so quickly, that people have a tendency to make the news more than report the news. And this was a bold example of that. It didn't show up on Apple, and everyone immediately assumed Apple's anti-gay. And to say that and really think that for a second is incredibly stupid. And it just, everyone I saw reporting it that way made me, I was very disappointed with it. And to your credit, you were very vocal about it online, and I thought you did a really good job of seeing the facts.
It didn't matter to me who was being homophobic. It was obvious someone was being homophobic. And that bothered me.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe people, at this point in life, how is that still a thing?
It's a big thing.
Like, really, how is that still a thing?
And that's the thing, is it wasn't even really, it wasn't like it was an integral part of the book. It was part of, and honestly, I hope to God at some point in time, Brian Vaughn explains that the aliens with the TV set heads, like, I don't understand what's happening with that at all, but you know, they flicker images, and it was just random, two random small images on two panels. Why was it a problem? It set me off, and more so the apology set me off, because I hate it when people obviously think that I'm an idiot. And that's all that press release was mm-hmm. Hey, you guys are idiots. We're going to tell you this and you're going to believe it.
Yeah.
Man, I was pissed. But anyway, let's get off the negative. It's my hate.
You're bringing me down, man.
We want to end things on a positive note. So what do you have that you want to rave about, Tyler?
I'm going to rave about a book that, if you had asked me, I don't know, a couple months ago, what I thought would be the most likely books I would rant about would be this one.
Oh,
I'm going to rave about Avengers Arena. When Avengers Arena got announced, I did all but spit upon the announcement. I could not believe that I was seriously getting Hunger Games Marvel Edition, or even Battle Royale Marvel Edition. It just seemed so lame. And so, it just screamed, hey, we got all these dudes. We don't know where to put them. We're going to put them in this stupid book where we can kill them off. Like, it just immediately. And the fact, I get that the original covers and the promo art and stuff was supposed to be an homage to the series that they were seemingly ripping off from. And it really, right out of the gate, it's just soured my whole impression of this book. Fast forward 7 issues into this book, and I love this book. This book is not a ripoff. And, I mean, yes, is it a bunch of kids on an island who are being forced to fight each other to the death? Yes. Okay, so right there we got a little bit of a ripoff. But you know what? That's not exactly the most original premise in the world to begin with. So it's that doesn't bother me. What I like about this book the most of all, frankly, it isn't even about the kids. This book did what no comic could ever do. It made Arcade cool. Arcade is cool, like really cool. It's this issue in particular was just, because that's all I've been asking for 6 issues, is how the hell is Arcade so badass in this book? It doesn't make sense. And now I get it. And I don't know, have you been reading this book?
I find it interesting and indicative of your personality that you thought the book was going to suck and yet you bought it anyway. Like you have a problem, and we need to dwell on this in a later podcast. I bought it and I liked the first 2 issues. You know, I thought, it was like cool. I like some of the little aspects of it. You know, like the little health bars under the people's names and things like that. I was like, yeah, it's kind of cool. All right, whatever.
Yeah.
And plus, I think that the Marvel Universe does need to trim down the amount of characters it has. So seeing them die, I was all for it. But after issue 2, the book got stale for me. But I had already invested in it, and I was like, it's a miniseries. I'll ride it out, see where it goes, whatever. I loved this issue primarily because it could have been a standalone. Like, they could have released this as, like, Arcade Origins one-shot. There was a minimal tie-in to the series itself. Although the one thing I thought was absolutely amazingly cool was they admitted that it was a ripoff of Hunger Games, because Arcade is sitting there reading Hunger Games going, hey, yeah, this book has great ideas in this book. Like, man, okay. Being self-aware like that, I think, is kind of cool. It's nice to see. Arcade has always been one of those just ridiculous villains, much like Stiltman, who I, you know, hate on every podcast. But, you know, one of those villains that when you see him show up, you're like, oh, man, really? I'm going to sit through this nonsense. Why is he a villain? You know, it's just, it's clown shoes. It's like, to me, it's like the Riddler in Batman. Every time the Riddler shows up, I'm like, really? Come on. How is he a villain? How is he a threat? You know, really? No, stop. You know, I have a hard time getting invested in a story and feeling like, oh man, something bad's going to happen. He's going to tell a riddle. Or, oh no, Arcade's going to build a giant pinball machine and put the heroes in it. Yeah. You know, like oh no, Wolverine's caught in the giant pinball machine of death. Here we go again. It's like, oh. Yeah, like, oh, come on. But yeah, no, it did make him cool. And it was an interesting take. It was nice that they explained everything, because if you have been reading this book, you got to wonder, how is he pulling off the stuff he's pulling off on this island? It all makes sense now. So I'm actually reinvested in this book, and now I really want to see where it goes the last couple issues. I don't know how it can end positively for anybody. Like, I can't picture how this one's going to end anyway good. But I'm in it anyway.
You know these kids. The thing about this book, though, you know these kids aren't dead. Like, you know they're going to wake up in tubes.
No, let them be dead. They're stupid characters. All of them.
Oh, I'm with you. These are really lame characters. I like the Young Avengers. Like, there are good kid characters in the Marvel Universe. These are not them. These are very much not them.
No, I would be happy if Young Avengers got thrown on this island too, to be honest with you. Everyone but Kid Loki can go away. I love
don't you
Kid Loki.
My Kid Loki.
In a non, you know, non-predatory way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'm not gonna have to go to every house in my neighborhood and say, "Hey, my name's Tyler. I love Kid Loki." Yeah. But I don't know. I just this book is great, and if you thought like me, this book is gonna be derivative of things that I hate. You know, what's next? Avengers Twilight. You know, like, that's how I looked at it at first. Don't. It's kind of like you with don't think this is 1980s Hawkeye. This is the same thing. Don't think that this is just Hunger Games with a mask. This is actually a much better book than that. And if you can't believe us alone, if you really can't at least believe us that Arcade is cool, just buy issue 7. Seriously, spend $4. You won't regret it. If you regret it, I will send you the $4 for credit.
Tyler stepping up to the plate. Yeah, so I agree with you. I don't know if it necessarily is, you know, something that it was so good that people should jump in and buy the whole series up till now. But if you're reading it, or you stopped reading it, this issue definitely redeemed it. All right, so for my rave, I want to rave about what I'm going to call the return of Animal Man. So Animal Man by Jeff Lemire started off as one of the best books in the New 52. Spectacular writing, compelling story, interesting art that kind of suited the book. Really, it's hard to explain what, just like Hawkeye, it's hard to explain what was so good about this book. And then Rotworld happened. And I even pegged Rotworld as one of my best comic moments of 2012. And I wrote that for Geek Legacy in my Best of 2012 article. And then immediately the next issue hit and Rotworld tanked. And I was like, oh, son of a bitch, making me a liar. And then it continued to tank for what felt like 15 more issues. Now it's over, thank God, and we're getting back to what made this book so good for the first 8 issues or so, which is the examination of how Buddy deals with being a superhero with a family. You know, and that's something you don't normally get. I mean, you get it sometimes, you know, like Spider-Man's always trying to protect Aunt May and things like that. But it really is brought to focus in this book, and it's kind of an interesting take on things. How does a B-tier superhero who isn't a Superman, you know, he's not able to stand toe-to-toe with, you know, with any of the big guns, be a B-lister at best, who has to have a day job to pay the bills, how does he deal with having a family in the thing, you know, balancing that life? And what sounds actually kind of boring when you say it that way is really compelling in the way that Jeff Lemire writes it. So I'm happy to say I'm back on board the Animal Man train. I highly recommend if you're a DC reader, you pick it up. I highly recommend if you're not necessarily a spandex and capes kind of comic book reader. This is a good book that kind of it walks a fine line, a nice balancing act between being very drama and human oriented and also having the fantastical elements. Really cool. You know, I'm interested to see what happens with the aftermath of the death of his son. I'm hoping that they keep him dead. I'm hoping that, you know, this isn't just another one of these, oh, in two issues, he's back to life. You know, they kind of went down that route, you know, for a minute. I don't know if you read this book or not, but, you know, they went down this route a little bit where his daughter, who is, you know, actually really superpowered, was contemplating bringing him back to life. You know, and they put the kibosh on that, and hopefully it stays that way because, you know, that sort of texture to the character is kind of cool. And I got to be honest with you, the way that he's dealing with the death of his son, a lot better than Batman's dealing with the death of his, you know. I mean, this just feels more real to me. You know, he's not off kidnapping Frankenstein, you know, trying to figure out how to resurrect his kid. He's just grieving like a normal human being would, which, you know, is kind of refreshing. So definitely buy this book if you're not buying it. Pick it up.
This is actually really exciting news to me because I did read that book up until Rotworld and I stopped reading it. And so it's good to know that it's because it was hands down, I would say, not just top five surprises of the New 52, but I would say right from the get-go with the first couple issues was one of the best five New 52 books total. When everything first relaunched, that book really blew everybody away for all the reasons you listed. And it was a book that I didn't think I would like, but that was a time when everybody was trying everything. It was crazy. It was the 70s of comics, and it was really impressive. So
yeah, you can hop back in this last episode or last issue rather, and all you need to know is that Rotworld happened. His daughter has superpowers, and his son died as the byproduct of the Rotworld shenanigans. That's all you need to know. You don't need to read 1,500 issues of Swamp Thing and Animal Man to get that. And you can pick right back up on the series this issue and right back to the awesome. So definitely do it.
Oh, nice.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up, nerds and nerdlets. Thanks once again to listening to Tyler and I ramble on about the art form we both love so very much. Make sure to follow us on the Twitter for all sorts of geeky musings and anecdotes. You can find me at The Mighty Jerd and Tyler at
Batman Inc. VP.
Excellent. And remember to visit geeklegacy.com for all your comic, movie, TV, and video game news and needs. We'll see you all in 2 weeks. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.